Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:55 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is July 11th. I thought we'd kick off with oil prices because they were down over $3 at one point today, finished out the day closer to unchanged. So we continue to see a bounce from the $100 level. And I think this is quite important because we're getting a clear divergence between the outlook for oil and just about every other commodity. When we then think about what's happened in oil over the course of the last year, well, prices doubled between early December and early March and have been consolidating now for the last 4 months, but remain quite steady. And when we look at this on a longer term time scale, well, we can see clearly that prices are at elevated levels and could potentially move higher from here. It's not simply about the tightness in the market as a result of sanctions on Russia, although that's obviously been a causal event in the spike that we've seen. But it's worth remembering that prices bottomed in December and were rising ahead of that event. Now, when we then think about where prices are right now, they're at obviously a big psychological level around $100, and we've got plenty of evidence of prices bouncing around here in 2012 through 14. Then the bigger question is, where's the additional supply going to come from? Well, there's plenty of supply that's around. It's not simple. It's not that the world has to go off and find new oil. I think that point isn't being made nearly well enough. But there's been a dearth of investment in new supply, and particularly offshore. So, for example, Shell has completed or is in the process of completing a an underground drilling structure or production structure for Norway. So it's going to be well offshore and it'll be pipelined to the Norwegian coast. It's going to come online at some point around 2026. So it's not like there isn't new sources of natural gas, for example, or oil that are potentially available to come online. It's just that they're not available today. And this is obviously problematic because there is a problem with supply in Russia, and not so much about whether Russia can produce more, but it's been inhibited from producing more because of a lack of imports of key materials and personnel. Then Russia is also causing mischief by cutting off supply from Kazakhstan. Libya's production has fallen over. Venezuela's production has been way down. The lack of a handy pipeline is inhibiting the export of Canadian crude. So all of these types of factors are more as a result of a lack of investment rather than any real shortage of oil. There's plenty of oil around. It's just that it's been politically dangerous to invest in any of them. That's helping to support the price, even before we start to think about the challenges that Russia represents. But it's also, I think, worth highlighting that copper prices are coming down, and they were down another 10 cents in here today. So the price has paused around the 350 area, and it's really quite oversold in the short term. But we don't have a lot of evidence yet of any kind of major rally taking place. It continues to look like a type 2 top formation completion. When we look at the LME Metals Index, it's also rolled over and come down from 5,500 to 3,700 in the space of about 2 months. So this is pricing in a really significant fall off in demand. When we think about demand and metals, well, you can't go far without thinking about China. So the Hang Seng has been trending downwards for over a year. It bounced from, and I should put this back into local currencies. It bounced from the 18,000 level earlier this year, unwound the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. Now it's easing back. But then we have the other, I think, important factor that's riling demand in China. It's the coronavirus. You can't simply ignore it any longer. The BA, or what, let's just call it the fifth iteration of the Omicron variant, has been much more virulent. And there isn't a clear answer yet as to whether it's less deadly. It's having less of an impact on lots of countries because they've already gone through significant outbreaks within their populations. China has not. And the one thing that we've learned is that the very strict quarantines can slow the spread of the virus. But when you've got such large reservoirs of the virus residing in much of the global population, then the chances of stopping it are zero. So China continues to adopt its zero COVID policy. They're going to go through rolling blackouts, or excuse me, rolling lockdowns. And this could be a pattern of behavior within the Chinese economy for the foreseeable future. The outbreak in Shanghai is ramping higher again. The casinos in Macau have been closed down. It's more likely than not that we're going to see outbreaks in an increasing number of countries. The Chinese government continues to invest in rail infrastructure, and that is despite the fact that there is nobody on the trains because of these rolling lockdowns. So the Chinese railway company has got almost $1 trillion in debt, and that number continues to increase. There's also a tendency, which I think it's fair to say, that Japan was castigated for building bridges to nowhere, but China is building railways to nowhere. And they've built a 600-kilometer railway between two sparsely populated areas in Xinjiang. They've had to elevate the railway above the sand dunes in the Taklamakan Desert. So it's a really impressive feat of engineering, and incredibly impressive when you see the photos of the railway going above the sand dunes. But at the same time, it's a total waste of money. So there's a lot of this kind of wasteful spending going on, and at the same time they're locking down the economy and you're getting lower growth, and copper prices and industrial metal prices have rolled over, and the banking sector is underperforming. So there were riots over the weekend outside of banks in Shenzhen because depositors couldn't get their money out. So these are indicative of significant challenges within the economy. And the credit impulse has turned higher, and generally that would be associated with appreciable evidence of rising asset prices. We're just not seeing it because a lot of the biggest companies are being fined, and they're weighing on these companies. So there's a clear instinct by institutional investors to want to own these companies. They've got really attractive valuations, but the government continues to hit them whenever they rally. So Alibaba got all the way up to test the region of the 200-day moving average and then pulled back rather sharply in here today. Tencent is another example of a company where the government has no interest in a recovery, and it's still trending lower in really quite a consistent manner with a sequence of ranges, one below the last. Then, even within the smaller portions of these social media type companies, Meituan has also pulled back from the region of the 200-day moving average, and there's still a sequence of lower rally highs. So it's, I think, fair to say that we're not out of the woods quite yet with China, and there's going to be at least, we're going to have to see at least more evidence that demand is returning to dominance, and so far that evidence has been pretty lacking. Now, China was important in during the credit crisis because they were willing to spend when and they were willing to pump liquidity into their economy. And they basically rescued the entire global economy during the crash in the USA and in Europe. And it's looking increasingly likely that they're just not in a position to do that today. And they're more worried about the potential for a housing and property and infrastructure crash and a deleveraging process within the economy. And there's also the potential that the reason that they're so wedded to the lockdowns is because they want to forestall any real threat of social unrest. Because social unrest is the one thing that the Communist Party is more afraid of than anything else, and not least because that's how they came to power in the first place. Now, when we think then about what's going on in Japan, well, the local elections went in favor of Abe's party over the weekend. So the Nikkei was in positive territory in here today, but the yen took another significant leg lower. So it's breaking downwards to another new low. The dollar was exceptionally firm in here today. So continuing to extend its breakout. The euro is coming all the way down to test parity, and it's going to have to rebound in a very clear fashion to begin to unwind this short-term oversold condition. It's also dragging down the pound, and the pound is down into the 118 handle in here today. This still remains a reasonably consistent downtrend as well. So this continued strength in the dollar, where we have the dollar index popping on the upside. Well, this is siphoning money out of the global economy. So, Sri Lanka going, or the government falling over the weekend. Then you have Ghana looking at having to invite the IMF back in, even though the government said they weren't going to do that. And of course, then you've got the perennial worry places like Argentina or Turkey, where the currencies have been particularly weak as well. So, when we think about Turkey, for example, the currency having rebounded impressively at the beginning of the year continues to deteriorate. And it's hard to say, to question the consistency of this trend. They might they're still in an environment where the Erdogan government does not want to support the currency. They don't want to raise interest rates. So inflation remains problematic. Inflation remains problematic just about everywhere. I think one of the biggest challenges for Europe is simple. The Nord Stream 1 pipeline was closed down today for repairs. Russia said that if the turbine that was being repaired in Canada is returned, then supplies would be able to increase. But they need about six turbines, and some of those turbines are under repair within Russia, and there's no sign yet that they're completed. And if everything were to go okay for Europe, they might effectively be able to refill their storage facilities for natural gas. But the last thing Russia wants is for Europe to be able to weather this event comfortably in the winter. There are two, I think, particularly important strategic events that are likely to happen in the fall to winter. By hook or by crook, Russia will probably attempt to try and ensure that Europe doesn't get enough gas so that they'll be uncomfortable in the winter. Then they're pushing through the armaments that they were using in the Second World War onto the front in Ukraine. And it's hard not to think of all of that as fodder for the Javelin missiles and the other anti-tank missiles that have been donated by other countries. And once Ukraine runs out of those missiles, and the production of them has not yet been ramped up. Well, then Russia is going to have a much easier time taking over the country. So they failed in their rushed attempt to attack on three fronts, and now they've regrouped, and they seem to be willing to just throw tanks and tank crews into the firing line as fodder for these Javelin missiles, and that's enormously bloody. They've lost a quarter of their of the army that they accumulated prior to the invasion, and they are probably willing to lose more. But if Ukraine runs out of those anti-tank weapons, then Russia is going to roll over the defenses. So that could easily happen in the third quarter of the year. And it would put upward pressure on oil prices. It would create a really significant exogenous effect, problematic issue for Europe. The European stock market is steadying in the region of the low from earlier this year, but that is in local currency terms. And the euro was especially weak in here today. When we look at this in foreign currency terms, the stock market is trending downwards in no uncertain terms. Of course, people are begging the question whether we're going to have a global recession. Well, we have an inverted yield curve. So, all other factors being equal, that suggests there's going to be and I think it is worth reminding ourselves that it first became inverted in March. So there'll be a recession 6 to 12, excuse me, between 6 and 18 months after the inversion. So that means that we're on recession watch from the third quarter of this year. And Europe is already in recession. And if it's not officially in recession, it soon will be. And the industrial sector is in really big trouble. And the export sector is in trouble because the USA is likely to be in a recession, and it's one of the big buyers of European exports. China, with its lockdowns and its debt issues and the uncertainty of the political environment, is going to be a less big buyer of European goods. And then, of course, you have the whole issue with Russia. So Europe is more than likely going to be in a recession. And we're seeing commodity prices coming down hard. So that's going to put pressure on commodity exporters. When we think about the Australian metals index, or excuse me, materials index, well, in local currency terms, it's testing the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but in dollar terms, it's already broken lower. So we're seeing a really significant deterioration in some of these mining companies. So then let's just think about, well, what could possibly rebound? Well, oil prices remain quite steady, but the oil shares have also pulled back in a violent manner, but they are starting to steady. So they are a pure beta play on the oil price. And there are large portions of the market are very susceptible to additional weakness. But at least the oil companies are holding up because oil prices have been steady. But the problem for oil prices is that we have supply that is constrained, but then if we have recessions everywhere, we're also going to have demand destruction. And demand destruction will have a significant effect on the price. So oil is not going to stay up on its own. It might be the last one to roll over, but it isn't going to stay upwards on its own. And that suggests then that we're going to have a more difficult environment. At least UK natural gas prices are coming back down, and European natural gas prices were also lower in here today because people are willing to bet that Russia will reopen the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. But that is a really doubtful prospect. Certainly that if they do open it up, it'll be on lower volume. So we're in a very difficult environment overall. And then let's think about the bond markets. The 10-year yield was down by 9 basis points in here today. And it rebounded really impressively for 3 days last week. And it has not broken the sequence of lower rally highs from the peak in June. There is still the possibility that this is a failing upside break. But if that's the case, well, then it will fall through 2.75%. And if it does that, then it's much more likely that we're going to have a very deep pullback in yields and a substantial rebound in treasuries. And that substantial rebound in treasuries isn't suddenly because the US government has become fiscally responsible, but rather that they're good for the money and the dollar is strong. And the reality is that when there are risks everywhere else, people will buy bonds as a safe haven. Gold prices today were in negative territory and still under pressure following the breakdown that we had last week. So we're going to have to see a clear upper dynamic to confirm that we're back in a recovery scenario, and we haven't had it yet. So prices are coming back down to test the region of the 1,000-day moving average and the lows put in 2021. But we would need a clear upward dynamic to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.